Welcome back to the Catholic Dad Show. My name is Chris, and we are in part three of our four-part series, Doug on Tap. We are joined with Doug today, and our topic today is intimacy with Doug. Doug, welcome.
Well, hey, how's it going?
Hey.
Yeah.
Are you ready to get intimate?
That's a very intimate way to bring it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Very intimate hello.
So there is something beautiful about Catholicism, and you mentioned that in your conversion, and if you haven't seen some of the previous episodes, check them out. They're outstanding. But in your conversion process, theology of the body was one of the things that you read.
Yes.
And I'm going to assume here, but it was probably Christopher West's.
Yeah, the For Beginners.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
The accessible version.
Yes.
Not Love and Responsibility, which right. is like a doctorate in, anyways. But there, everything is very incarnational, like enfleshed in the way that Christopher West describes it. He can listen to a YouTube album and be crying about how God is present in the lyrics and stuff like that. Like
right.
he is so passionate and absolutely amazing in regards to it. But for that reality, that enfleshed reality, like intimacy is something that is a part of your conversion process.
Right.
Yeah. And so why talk about intimacy with Catholic dads?
Oh, why not? I think, when we see marriages struggle and reasons for divorce, right? Like intimacy's got to be up there along with what finances. If there's a lack of intimacy, then we go looking for it somewhere else. Like we need it. We want it. We're wired for it.
Fidelity and intimacy, I would say, are probably the same issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, and then there's just got to be selfishness, you know, up there for divorce, like, right, just plain old, you know, we need to remove, what is it, no-fault divorce. Like, you know, you need to get back in there and work at it. Like, you committed to this person, you got kids, they deserve it. I believe every child is entitled to live with both biological parents under the same roof. And then from there, you do what the next best option is.
Sure.
And if you don't have to get a divorce, please try to keep your family together. So, anyway, that's my PSA on that. And so, I think it's very important, I think, because we just have these expectations, and then we talk to our partner about what we expect or even ask them what they expect.
Right.
You know, and we've got this Hollywood, pornographic, magazines, all these different examples shoved in our face. This is what – and we got social media, which is just the highlight reel of everybody's life.
Right.
It's not even barely any – nitty gritty, like very little authenticity, you know? And so I try to post as much as I can. Like, my dog is covered in poop and I can't find the dirty diaper and the child.
It's a mystery.
Yeah. I can't find the dirty diaper, but what I can find is a child with poo up his butt who obviously straddled this dog and rode around like a horse. And so now I've got two beings to clean and other kids to go find a dirty diaper. Like, I love posting that kind of thing.
And then my four-year-old just came and said, Dad, I'm bored.
Yes.
It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Right. Well, this is not a boring life, sir. We can't find the dirty diaper.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's the same thing. And we're not sharing not only on social media, but with our partners in life, like our spouses, really, I don't think we're being as open and honest and intimate with them as we could be.
So is intimacy more than sex when
absolutely.
You're talking about it?
Okay. Yeah. For me, I find intimacy in, I have to tell my wife and myself, like, let's put our phones down and look at the same screen. Even if we don't talk to each other, we just lay next to each other holding hands.
But that's a different layer of intimacy.
Yeah, in the sucky, boring moment. And let's watch a TV show together.
Yeah.
Let's watch Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah.
Or wherever the case may be. Let's watch a movie. Or for her, let's watch Dateline because she can't stand movies. She won't go to a movie for 2 hours. She thinks she's trapped there. But she'll watch 10 hours of Dateline without moving a muscle.
Right, right, right.
But there's gaps in it, I guess. I don't know. So I'm like, I can tell you these stories in 10 minutes or less.
Yeah.
Like we can knock these out. I can knock these out for you real fast.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on. And so like I find that intimate and like going on little trips, just she and I together, like I love four wheelers and jet skis and ATVs and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And she likes being on jet skis more than she likes four wheelers, but so we'll go ride jet skis together. Let's just take an hour and go ride jets.
Yeah.
We're not even talking to each other.
Yeah.
But to me, that's not just quality time. When we're done, we're holding hands, walking away together. Hey, look at that cliff over there. Like that leads to intimacy.
Yeah.
You know, like I think that is foreplay, whether or not some people realize it or not. Like you're putting in that time so that whenever it comes go time, like you actually want to do that. And then sometimes you just got to fit it in.
Yeah.
Like it is important to a marriage to come together like that. I mean, God gave us that. He created sex and procreation. Like I was learning in therapy for the sobriety thing. He was like, you know, you're wired to become, when you have an orgasm, whatever is there in front of that caused that orgasm, you're going to become attached to that.
Right.
And so we become attached to our spouses through like the act of sex and that sort of thing. And both
by both design. Parties,
yeah. By design, you know, and it's undeniable. It's like you can call it the science, but the science is designed by our creator.
Right.
You know, and so like he gave that to us. And so, yeah, I think I mentioned in the last episode, getting sober, like opened up this huge wound that needed to be healed that led to more and more intimacy, not just sex.
Which played a role in the healing process.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Absolutely. And so, and it helped keep me sober. Like, oh, this is the benefits of sobriety. I get to like have conversations with my wife. She wants to talk to me.
Sign me up.
Yeah. Like, let's do this. Like, she wants to hear about my day.
Yeah.
And she'll listen to me talk about pro wrestling for a few minutes. Like, she does not care. She even took me to a show. Like what's going on here? And then, she's taking care of me. I'm gonna take care of her now. And I feel like, you know, when our paths just aren't crossing correctly anymore, and like our needs aren't getting met. And so like with my drinking, I was like, well, if we're not gonna have sex, then I'm gonna drink.
Yeah.
And if she's just gonna go to sleep now, I'm gonna stay up and watch this movie. And if she's not gonna change that diaper, I'm not gonna wash that dish, or whatever the case would be. Like she wants me to make all these phone calls, well, I'm not going to do it because she's not helping me with that thing.
Scorekeeping.
Yes.
Driven by bitterness.
Right.
Yeah.
Because needs aren't being met.
Right.
And then sometimes like you just got to take a minute and stop and think. And then I'm not saying somebody has to be the bigger person. You just have to be like, why isn't she doing that for me? Why isn't he doing that for me?
Because
why is this happening?
Because the cross is also intimate,
mm-hmm.
right? That sacrifice on the cross. I mean, Jesus, we put a loincloth on, right? Mm-hmm. But Jesus was completely vulnerable on the cross. And there is something about that sacrificial love is also a form of intimacy.
Right.
Okay. So one thing that my wife and I noticed is that we went through this cyclical kind of journey, right? Mm-hmm. Where things were, relationally, we were doing good, and then we kind of had a dip, mm-hmm. and then things got better again, and then we had a dip, and that kind of process aligned with our chart.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
So when I say that for you dads who don't know out there, we did the Creighton model of natural family planning, and so during the times where you're trying to avoid pregnancy for mm-hmm. valid reasons, and in order to do that, you have to avoid sexual intimacy for,
right.
I mean, for like a 10-day stretch,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? And if the woman's cycle isn't as consistent, it could be all the way up to like a 20-day stretch, you know what I mean? Which becomes a little bit brutal and it becomes challenging. But I guess what
and
I'm saying-
And then when it doesn't become challenging for the other person, it kind of hurts your feelings, right?
Right.
As the man, you're like, why don't you miss this? Like, right. I'm over here struggling and you're going through this like it's the wind's blowing and it's no big deal. Like the wind blows for me and I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, man, I didn't notice we hadn't done it in 6 days, 2 hours and 34 minutes. I'm like, well, I have a count, sir.
And so I have a couple of phrases for if I could make a bumper sticker or t-shirt for mm-hmm. NFP, mm-hmm. right? And we're going to go there, but at the same time, I want to just say the church's teaching is beautiful, even if it's hard.
Yes.
And to follow it. But the fact that to lie to someone and say, oh, NFP is easy, you'll get it. Like NFP is probably harder than marriage at times.
Yes.
It's so hard. NFP mm-hmm. stands for none for Papa.
Yeah.
There right?
you go, that'll work.
Or the other one of the bumper stickers, NFP, it's better than burning in hell.
Yes.
Which to a degree, sometimes that's the only motivator towards following NFP because it is a brutal sacrifice.
It is. And like, I have a friend, he's Protestant and his family does it. And he just ended up with a sixth kid and he's like, he wanted to stop at three. And he's like, I need to have a talk with this Creighton fella.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like he and I are going to have some words and he owes me some child support or something like that.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there is something about it. The other piece, and I brought us props for this one.
Okay.
What is the role of intimacy when you're fighting with your spouse, right? Like, I assume that you and your wife are like anyone where you sometimes get in fights or whatever.
I wish we got in more fights.
Why?
Because I want to get it out there. Tell me what I'm doing wrong. Like, yell at me. Say something. Like, as long as it means something. Like,
so to you, almost any conflict is healthy conflict.
No, but taking care of that conflict is healthy.
And that,
confronting it.
Yes. Okay, so for me, when it comes to, I mean, these are gloves. I obviously do not strike a person. Like, no, this is just, this is an analogy, right? Yeah. but the reality is when there's conflict that takes place, like the way that I confront my wife on things versus the way that I would confront maybe a coworker or a friend on something.
Yes.
Coworker's probably a better analogy. Like, it's different because there's intimacy between my wife and I that's different than me and my coworker.
Right.
Right? So the intimacy aspect... but at the same time, sometimes I treat my wife more poorly because I know that she's always going to be there.
Yeah, I think they become our punching bag without us, not intentionally.
Right.
But in fact, that was said to me, my wife said the other day, she's like, there's only so many times you can say whatever I think I called her mean or something like that, basically, and not so many words without cursing or anything like that. And I wasn't being inappropriate, but she's like, there's only so many times you can call me a mean wife. And I was like, okay, that's the last time then.
Yeah,
I won't do it again.
Yeah,
touche. You know,
yeah.
you've made your point, and so, but we don't. I don't know I'm doing something wrong unless you say, Doug, I'm not going to put up with that much longer.
And that probably felt like a little bit of a punch to the face.
Yes,
but
nobody wants to hear you're a crappy husband.
Like, thank God for that punch, though.
Yeah,
right. Like, thank God that she told you, Doug, that hurts. It's like, whoa, you're my wife. I do not want to hurt you.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, sometimes when I get confronted, right, I put up walls because that hurt to be confronted. I didn't like being told I was wrong. And I'm a man, but I'm also fragile.
Yes. I'm a sensitive bunny.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 And so, and I think sometimes that's where intimacy, especially physical intimacy, which can include sex but doesn't have to include sex, really helps foster that sense of security. I know that sounds so weird, but as men, we can go out of the cave and we can go kill something and drag it home.
Yeah.
But we still want to hold hands while we're watching, you know, old episode of Friends on the couch. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and that seems so less masculine.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, it actually charges, like fills up our tank so we can go kill the next lion that tries to come into our den. Intimacy has a part in our fierceness as men, protectors, providers.
Well, rest is important. Like, that's a rest moment, right? You're sitting there, you're holding hands, you're not doing anything physical. And it's a nice rest for a minute. And then you're like, okay, let's get back to whatever life has for us. Like, you got to have those little moments where you recharge. And, you know, for Abby, she's very social. I'm very introverted. And like, I need everybody to go to sleep by around 11 o'clock so I can play about an hour or two of video games by myself to recharge.
Yeah.
But then I also need my time with my wife. I also need my separate my kids every once in a while and just hang out with them. I also need to go see my parents by myself without my wife and kids, which rarely happens. You know, sometimes you need that. Like, you got to have those little intimate moments. You know, like, we talk about intimacy and then what is an intimate moment? Like, when you look at, I like to use, everybody loves Raymond all the time. There's, Frank is this harsh grandfather, like
That's Raymond's dad.
Yeah, Raymond's dad, Frank. Yeah. You know, and I love him. Everybody's like, oh, he's so horrible to Marie. And I'm like, yeah, but remember that really sweet moment you had where you like wiped the stuff off? He's like, I like you better without all the crap. Like, he had all this makeup or like a mask on to go to sleep. And I was like, that was an intimate moment.
Yeah.
That was so sweet and so tender. And like, he kind of revealed himself to her for a moment. It's not often, but it was him and her together, and they had this great moment, and you're like, man, that was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think you have that with your parents, you have that with your kids, you have that with your spouse, my siblings, my sister and I, you know, we get along great. And so I think you need all those to recharge. And so you kind of have to learn not just that intimacy is like, and sex is important in a marriage, but like, you got to separate what is non-sexual intimacy, regular intimacy, like kind of get your category straight.
Yeah.
And then go for it, you know?
Yeah.
And I, you know, to go back, you know, in the last episode on sobriety, I said, you know, it's great because I had more sex, but I say that cheeky, but the truth is, so I sobered up. I didn't smell as bad. I wasn't a slobbering idiot. You could understand the words I say.
You remembered things.
I remembered things. Yeah. I was more approachable as a human being so that my wife would want to talk to me.
All that made you more attractive.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah, yeah. And then I lost 25 pounds. Not to say like Fluffy Doug wasn't a good looking fella.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was more active, more agile, and I was interacting more with my kids. She sees me hanging out with my kids more, and she's like, Matt's a sexy man right there.
Yeah.
Hanging, being a dad. Look at that sexy dad.
Yeah.
You know, and so that matters. That counts. And so really just I was meeting a need for her. Like, so when I removed alcohol, that big crutch that was there, like I just took that out. I think that was the first step of meeting a need for her. And then she's like, okay, I'll give one back to him. And then there's just kind of give and take. And then we realize we want to sacrifice that for that other person.
Right.
You want to make, like, because you love them so much, you're like, oh, I want to do that for you.
Yeah.
I can't wait to do that for you, whatever that sacrifice may be. And then it becomes not quite a sacrifice. And even if you start doing it and they're not doing what you want back, you keep doing it out of a love for that person.
Right.
Because Jesus does it for us all the time. Like, we don't always give him back what he wants. I think it's like what, maybe 1% of the time we're probably successful on that.
And that 1% changes the world.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I just want to echo what you said, because I think there's times where intimacy, at least sexual intimacy, where there's an openness, mm-hmm. right? And then there's a willingness, and then there's a desire, right? And it sounds like your sobriety turned, and you living out your fatherhood, like mm-hmm. Catholic fatherhood is sexy.
Yeah.
Like that's a weird phrase to say, but like when my wife became a mother, I fell in love with her on a whole new level.
Yeah.
I married a woman, and then somewhere along God blessed us and made her a mother. And there's a whole nother level of beauty. And same is true for women, to be like, your fatherhood is amazing. The way you cared for the children, come here and let me celebrate you. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm open. It's not that I'm willing. It's that I actually desire to embrace you right now, father of my children.
Well, I'll tell you the sexiest thing Abby ever said to me, talking about mother, is, you know, she'd been working at Planned Parenthood forever. And when people were like, don't you think birth control is this great thing for stopping unwanted children? Like, the abortion numbers will go down. I was like, no, not when over half the women end up on an abortion table or contracepting.
Wow.
You know, yeah. like so we'll get into that later. But I'm like, no, because I'll tell you something else birth control does. It's a libido killer.
Yeah.
It's an intimacy killer.
Right.
It took my wife's sex drive out in the street and shot it and ran it over a few times.
Right.
And we still ended up getting pregnant. So yeah, there you go. It's a crapshoot. It's a gamble. And you're probably going to lose with birth control. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, and then after she had our first, she put in an IUD, which people can Google that. But, you know, it's a little piece of plastic. It's almost shaped like a T.
Non-chemical birth control.
Yeah. It has a little bit, though. It does release a little bit of hormone.
Okay.
And they put it in, I guess, her cervix or something like that. And it's got these little strings so you can feel it and find it and take it out if you need to. And there's this really wonderful picture of a baby holding the IUD as it's being born. Have you seen that?
No.
A lady had an IUD. She got pregnant anyway. And those things are pretty effective at not getting pregnant. She got pregnant anyway.
Right.
And those things are also dangerous, because if you do get pregnant, it can grow into the baby's skull, and like it can cause a lot of problems. Right. Well, this baby was born with it in its hand, like, can't stop me.
Holding it. It wasn't holding like, it, okay.
In the hand. Yeah, yeah. Like, a few IUD.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so Abby had that in, and after we discerned, okay, we're gonna come into the Catholic Church, and we'd been going to RCI, and we went to Mass, and something happened in that homily that day from Father Michael O'Connor.
Yeah.
He said something that clicked in her, and I had already kind of figured we're just going to have the one and done. Even coming into the Catholic Church, I was like, maybe we'll get to have another kid or two. Maybe she'll come back around to having more kids.
Boy, were you wrong.
And and I wanted more. When we got married, I was like, oh, my number was 5, her number was 1 or 0.
Okay.
And I was like, well, but we also knew when we were together, we would take on whatever comes.
Sure.
Getting married, even like without being Catholic or even that involved in Christian faith at all. Like, right. We knew that our yes to each other was forever.
Yeah.
And so anyway, she comes home from church that day, and we're standing there, and Grace is running around our legs. She's probably about three or four at the time. Mm-hmm. And Abby goes, I'm going to go in tomorrow. I'm going to get my IUD out. And I looked at her and I said, that's the sexiest thing you've ever said to me.
Nice.
She goes, I want to have more kids. I'm time. It's ready. I'm time.
Yeah.
Or I'm ready. It's time. And I was like, yes. And so that started, that was a big high, you know, like,
yeah.
But then we also had like all that birth control use really messed up her system. So we had to go into the doctor and get her system right and use an FP and certain treatments and that sort of thing that are all okay with the Catholic Church, like progesterone and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it took us, we were infertile year and a half or so, almost 2 years, I think, before we finally conceived again. But yeah. I'm telling you, as soon as she told me we were pregnant, I'm pretty sure we had sex. Like, that was just such a wonderful thing. And like you said, that desire, like, we were so happy we hit this thing we wanted to do. We wanted so badly this gift we wanted. We were like, we came together, celebrated, and just like, it became a very intimate moment.
Yeah.
Just in finding out, yes, you're pregnant, like, led us to that. So, I mean, like, yeah, when I talked about earlier, like, you got to have procreation, openness to procreation,
yep,
orgasm, and intimacy.
Yeah.
And to have successful or like a really good, valid, what are the words I'm looking for? Like, your sex life, you want it to thrive, you got to have those three things.
Right, right. Yeah. And that doesn't mean that you're aiming for pregnancy every time.
No.
It's that you're open,
right,
open to life, and mm-hmm, that, and that's important. And and you mentioned at the end of the last episode,
okay,
about finding out you're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And you just shared that once when you found out you were pregnant with your second, there was a rejoicing,
yes,
that was very intimate,
mm-hmm,
right? But there's also been times to where, like, my wife and I, like, NFP kind of tricked us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we followed all the rules, and yet we've got two lines on the stick.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard, but we've also suffered, like, 5 miscarriages.
Okay, yeah.
We have 6 kids on this side of heaven. We've had 11 pregnancies.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start, like, over time realizing, like, openness to life is different than being entitled to life.
Oh yeah, I've never heard it that way before.
Do you see what I'm saying? Yeah. So mm-hmm, the flip side of of the pro-choice thing is to where I'm entitled to life, and that's where things like in vitro and whatever, where they have, mm-hmm, a bunch of fertilized eggs.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And so we have to be careful that we're not controlling, but that we're open to receive. And that gifts are sometimes hard to receive when we don't fully understand them.
Right.
And exactly. And maybe I could say that in the midst of some of my frustrations, longstanding frustrations with NFP, right? But nevertheless, we journey that route. I think that there's maybe a perspective that I don't fully have yet,
mm-hmm,
that recognizes the greater gift of NFP in the midst of that. Maybe a perspective I don't have yet that shows a greater appreciation of the gift of pregnancy, even in the midst when I wasn't ready for it.
Right.
You know, because there's not a child that I would put back.
No, of course not.
I mean, the logistics alone of putting the kid back.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. No, but there's not. My life is made better. And it started with intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
It started with intimacy, and that gift grows. And I think that there's something powerful about that, because I know that there's men out there right now, and I know that we're going to be those men probably within the next 3 months, where there's going to be tension in our marriage,
mm-hmm,
and we're going to feel isolated and alone, and we're going to want to turn to other things.
Right.
Whether it's alcohol, video games, or pornography, or whatever it is, mm-hmm, you know, we're going to want to turn to other things. And I want to encourage you men to lean into the intimacy, even if you have to lean into a poverty in order to reach towards the abundance. That,
right.
And that's hard.
Well, that's kind of what I meant with embrace the suck on the sobriety thing. Like, I don't think our marriage would be as strong if we didn't suffer through some of those dry spells and hard times.
Right.
And you chose not to turn to alcohol, pornography, whatever the case may be, or hell, another friend, you know, like you didn't turn your intimacy and your attention to a friend or another person in your life and, like, grow that relationship up and ignore your spouse by ignoring another.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, no, I think, like, this is going to teach you something at some point, like whatever you're going through. So like if you're having that hard time, like just go like, okay, pray through it and look for what you're supposed to learn right now. What is God trying to teach you? What are you, this is probably a gift as well, you know? And I think the greatest example of suffering, obviously Jesus on the cross.
Right.
The next greatest example would be Mary watching it happen.
Yeah.
Never left his side.
Yeah.
Probably made eye contact who knows how many
times. Her heart was pierced.
And she was right there with him.
Yeah.
The entire time. And I think sometimes you have to do that because maybe you have to look at your, like if we're having a dry spell, well, what's going on with the other person? Like, well, what's happening that's causing it? And then you suffer through that with them. Like right now, my wife's had spine surgery. She's in a lot of pain. And so I'm like, well, I can't just complain that I'm not getting to have the intimacy I want to have. Like we're not, she doesn't want to lay with her head on my shoulder in bed because it hurts her neck.
Yeah.
And so I'm missing out on that for a little while.
Yeah.
And so you go to it and I'm clearly that's not the same kind of suffering Jesus went. It's like suffering teeny tiny S compared to the big S. Right.
Right.
But you still go through it. Like just be in it, be in the moment, be in the suck for a second there and see what happens when you come out. You're probably going to be better off.
And on a heaven-bound level,
mm-hmm.
it was the suffering of the cross that leads to the beatific vision for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we get to heaven. There's nothing more intimate than seeing God face to face, right? And so to look at our own situations and say, maybe this moment where it's difficult or there's tension will bear fruit later on. How do I submit that to the greater cause of intimacy, the greater cause of unity, both in an ordered way in my own self, so that I'm not running somewhere else to find intimacy with someone or something else. In our marriage, how do I build or plant the seeds for intimacy in the future? And sometimes that means serving our spouse in a sacrificial way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it means just recognizing that like this sacrifice bears fruit like in our family or in like outside of ourselves. Like,
right.
Full disclosure, sometimes we send a text message or seek to serve our wives in hopes that it will lead to intimacy later on.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it's good for us, but because it's good for me.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that's self-seeking intimacy, which isn't the full three that you talked about.
Yeah.
But there's other times where I serve my wife for the sake of my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And that organically, like naturally leads to a deeper and a fuller intimacy. And
sometimes we serve our wives because our kids are watching, you know.
And that's a noble mm-hmm. cause as well.
And you're like, well, they're going to see it and they're going to eventually move on to be spouses and friends and that sort of thing. And they're going to need to know what this looks like.
Yeah.
Marriage prep starts the day they're born because they're watching you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you're a married couple. They see you. That's when marriage prep starts. That's when they start learning about marriage. And they still need to go to marriage prep. They still need to have those conversations with their person and hopefully a mentor, like to learn like, okay, this is how we deal with expectations, finances, intimacy,
right,
sex, all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I feel like when we're sacrificially loving our spouse, it's our whole family.
Yeah.
Because if there's infidelity, if you cheat on your wife, you've cheated on your whole family.
Well, and that's how the family got there, right? Intimacy is how the family comes about.
Mm-hmm.
And so intimacy is how the family kind of grows, you know?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Last thoughts on intimacy. Last word of encouragement to maybe the husband that's feeling isolated or the spouse tension or something like that. What would you say?
I'd say forget yourself. Forget about yourself for a minute and go find out why maybe she's isolated herself from you. Like that's what happened with me, you know, and my drinking. And so maybe find out if she needs a little help. Maybe jump in with her and what she's doing and do that with her. And then that'll create togetherness and intimacy just through doing that, through just joining in and whatever she's doing. And if she tells you to go away, then go away for a minute, you know?
Yeah.
And also, going back to Raymond.
Everybody loves him.
There was an episode where him and his wife were discussing how they talk to each other and flirting.
Yeah.
And all that sort of thing. And really how they communicate wanting to have sex and intimacy and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And she was like, you would just love it. If I'd walk around and be like, hey, baby, you want to do it? And he goes, I would love it if you'd talk to me that way. And she starts laughing and rolls her eyes. My wife starts like, oh, man. And then our friend Heather, who's not married, oh, man. I'm like, you don't get to say. And like, why is that wrong for him to want that?
Right.
Why is that wrong for him to want his wife to want him?
Right.
Right?
Okay.
And so have that conversation with your person, with your spouse. Be like, I need you like 10% of the time to be the aggressive one. Uh-huh. I can't be the one chasing you all the time. I need you to chase me a little bit.
Okay.
Like, don't be scared. Like, yeah, you're the man. Oh, man, I shouldn't have to talk about these things. You should just want to be with me. No. Go have a conversation with your wife about what you need and want. And be like, babe, this might get uncomfortable. Bring up what you need to bring up. This is what I need. Can we at least work towards that? Whatever the case may be. Like with my wife, like, I need you to just say nicer things to me every once in a while.
And make the goal to communicate it.
Yes.
Don't make the goal for it to bear instant fruit to right. where you're getting chased around the house within the next hour.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just be like, my goal is communicate this.
Yes.
I heard you. I don't know if I agree. I got to let it sit. Like, a gardener doesn't expect to harvest fruit the second day after he plants the seed.
No.
You know what I mean? So till some soil and that's okay.
I just don't think it's not selfish and it's not unmanly for a man to go to his wife and say, babe, I need this.
Uh-huh.
And she'll probably appreciate it.
Yeah.
And same thing goes for her. Like, and give her the opportunity to tell you what she needs and then listen. Fulfill that.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is communicate.
Amen.
And be willing to jump in.
The first step to all intimacy.
That's right.
Good. Hey guys, thanks so much for joining us. Feel free to like, subscribe, follow, and share this with someone. Also, if you want to hear more from Doug, you can follow him. How can they follow you, Doug?
I'm over at Doug on Tap on all the social media things. And I do have my messages open. If you want to have a private conversation, I can do that. Anything you want to talk about. So that's where I'm at.
Awesome. We believe that Catholic fatherhood can change the world. And Catholic fatherhood draws strength from intimacy with their spouse. So don't be afraid to have that conversation today. Thank you guys so much for joining us.